Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO. You can find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. Look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. There you can find more information about Concordia University, Wisconsin. January 29th, 1499 is the day that Katie Luther, Katharina von Bora, was born. And we have a special visit from her today here in studio.
Hello and good morning, and thank you so much for inviting me to share my story with you today. I'm Katharine von Bora Luther, or Katie, as Dr. Luther usually called me. It's been more than 6 years since my dear Martin died, and these have not been easy years for me. I was worried when he went to Eisleben, as I usually was when he traveled out of town. There was so much political unrest. He had been working hard, had not been feeling well. But as usual, he went where he felt he was needed, and he assured me he would take care of himself. I was comforted that our three sons were with him, but while he was there, my greatest fears became reality. He became ill, and he died there in Eisleben before I could even be brought to him. His body was returned to Wittenberg, where thousands attended his funeral at the castle church, where he was buried at the foot of the altar where he had preached. Suddenly, I was alone. My best and kindest friend, my loving, loyal husband, was gone. Oh, it's not the first time I had had sorrow and hardship in my life. My mother died when I was just 5. When my father remarried, a widow with several children, our family finances, which were already strained, became that much more difficult. My father decided to enroll me in the convent boarding school for my education, not necessarily to become a nun. My father's sister was at the convent. My mother's sister was abbess of the convent. I did eventually enter the nunnery, and I was consecrated as a nun when I was just 15 years of age. Although my life there in the convent was lonely and monotonous, I can look back today and see that I did learn a lot of valuable lessons there. I learned discipline, the value of hard work, and I gained many skills that I was able to use later in my life on the outside. I tried to be an obedient nun, but on the inside, I yearned for freedom. Thankfully, we were not completely cut off from the outside world. We began to hear about Martin Luther, the Doctor of Divinity at the university there. We heard about his biblical teachings and writings, how he preached to the common people in German and wanted everyone to have direct access to the Holy Scriptures. We learned that he nailed 95 theses to the door of the Wittenberg Church, explaining why indulgences were useless. You see, the Pope had sent a man, Tetzel, and others into Germany to sell indulgences, which were simply signed pieces of paper, supposedly granting forgiveness of sins to those who paid enough money. Well, Dr. Luther was convinced from his study of the Holy Scriptures that God's plan of salvation had nothing to do with buying and selling, but rather that it was a free gift offered to all through the merits of his Son, Jesus Christ. When we had the chance, some of us began to quietly discuss these happenings amongst ourselves, and we wondered if there was any way we might be able to get out of the convent. Some of the nuns wrote to their parents and other family members asking for help, but there was little response. Keep in mind that smuggling of nuns was a capital offense, punishable by both the church and the state. Strict punishments were often handed out. It's little wonder that families were reluctant to become involved. So, we decided to send a secret letter to Dr. Luther himself and to send it by way of a merchant who made frequent deliveries into the convent. This was our thinking. If this merchant could bring things into the convent, surely he could take things out. Maybe us. Imagine our surprise and excitement when we received a reply to our letter from Dr. Luther, again by way of the merchant, indicating that not only was Dr. Luther willing to help plan for our escape, but he also pledged his support when we got out. Our escape was planned for Easter Eve, a night when we were able to stay up later than usual for prayer and meditation, and everything went according to plan. At the appointed hour, the merchant and a couple of his helpers arrived at our convent with his wagon, and they simply lifted us over the walls of the convent into the back of the wagon. There were 12 of us, including my father's sister, Magdalene. And although we had to travel some distance through Roman Catholic country, we were not discovered. We simply hid amongst the barrels in the back of the covered wagon. Oh, it was scary, all right. But for the first time in my life, I was making a decision on my own. I was 24 years old. I had lived in the convent for 19 of those years. It was Easter Sunday. We traveled to Torgau and on to Wittenberg. What a day of new life. Wittenberg itself was an unattractive little town. Muddy streets, garbage in heaps, livestock roaming freely, unpainted buildings. It didn't matter to me. It looked beautiful. I was free. Now, the question. What was I going to do? There were basically three options for runaway nuns: get married, return to their original family, or find a new family to live with. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. Some of the nuns had been able to be reunited with their family, three of our group. Dr. Luther had written to those families. He arranged for me to be taken into the family of Philip Reichenbach, a Wittenberg town clerk and a strong supporter of Dr. Luther. I was at that time 24 years old, homeless and penniless, so I needed a place to stay. The Wittenberg's family was very kind to me. During my stay with the Reichenbachs, I became a happy, productive member of the household. Their home was right in the center of Wittenberg, and it was a hub of activity. It was really good practice for me. I just didn't realize it at that time. I then lived with a second German family, the Lucas Cranach family. He was a very well-known artist, and like the Reichenbachs, they were very kind to me. During the 2 years that I lived with these two families, I did have a couple of potential suitors. One was a young man named Jerome from a wealthy family. We were really interested in one another, but his parents wanted their son to have nothing to do with a penniless runaway nun. Dr. Luther introduced me to a nearby pastor, Pastor Glotz, in the hope that something maybe could work out between the two of us. I wasn't interested in him. By this point, all of the refugee nuns had permanent homes except me. Dr. Luther had found husbands for 7 of them. Magdalene, my father's sister, went to a family in a nearby area to live. I alone was left in Wittenberg. I was 26. I had no money, no earthly possessions, but what I did have was God's promise that he takes care of his children. Well, rumors began circulating linking my name with Dr. Luther's as a possible match. I had become aware that a few of his friends, and especially his father, had been urging him to get married now that he was no longer a monk. I often went to services where Dr. Luther preached, and I secretly admired him from that distance. Once in a while, I even let myself imagine what it might be like to be his wife. But I had no idea he would ever be interested in me. Imagine my surprise when I learned that he was considering me for his wife, and when he made up his mind, he acted quickly. He did not need to go through the formality of seeking my father's permission, you see. My convent vow had officially removed me from the von Bora family. We really didn't have a courtship. He simply asked for my hand in marriage. I accepted. And our betrothal ceremony was held very soon thereafter at the Black Cloister, where Dr. Luther lived, only a handful in attendance. We did have a public ceremony, a wedding celebration a couple of weeks later at the Castle Church, and many attended that celebration, including Dr. Luther's aged parents. No one from my family was there, however. None of my friends. I was 26 years old. Dr. Luther was 42. I was now officially part of his world. And I couldn't help but wonder why he had married me. Was he trying to anger the Pope? Was he trying to please his father, who had been very upset when Martin decided to become a monk in the first place? Did Dr. Luther simply feel sorry for me? Was he fulfilling his obligation to take care of me? I was also concerned because there was a group of his friends opposed to our marriage because they thought it would harm the spread of the Reformation. Well, you can imagine what his enemies had to say about our marriage. What a scandal. A defrocked monk marrying a runaway nun? At any rate, following our wedding, I moved into the Black Cloister with Martin. The Black Cloister had been part of a former Augustinian monastery where Martin had lived while he was a monk, and also where he had continued to live while lecturing at the university. Quite frankly, the place was a mess. Buildings and grounds were in disrepair and disarray. I began to slowly clean the place up and to try to put a little order into Dr. Luther's daily life. One of the first things I did was to throw out his straw bed. He had confessed to a friend that he had not changed the straw in that bed for over a year. Sometimes I had to actually remind him to eat because he would become so engrossed in his readings and in his writings. Our marriage was quite an adjustment for a 42-year-old former monk. He wrote to a friend, "There's a lot to get used to in the first year of marriage. One wakes up in the morning, and there are a pair of pigtails on the pillow that had not been there before. Oh, I don't have pigtails anymore, but I did then." And you know, our marriage wasn't quite such an easy adjustment for me either. I yearned for Martin's affection. But now it seems that our home was always filled with visitors. Mealtime seemed to be taken up with theological talk. I had known little parental love as a child, and then I spent all those years in the convent. Now I was married, but I had to share my husband and his time with so many other people. And then there was the work. In order to free up Dr. Luther's time for his important work of ministry, I tried to take care of as many of the other responsibilities as possible, and there were many. To do that, I often got up at 4 a.m. In fact, Martin called me his morning star of Wittenberg. The grounds, the crops, the animals, the buildings, the borders, the meals, the work sometimes seemed endless. And I was also in charge of our family finances. Looking back, I can recognize that most of the major disagreements in our marriage had to do with money. It seems that Dr. Luther's income never seemed to match our expenses. He did not like to take income for his writings, even those printers and publishers received income from them. When needy students and refugee monks made their way to our home seeking refuge, he did not want to charge them. He considered them our guests. When other needy people made their way to our home, our door, asking for money, and we had none to give them, he would give them some of our wedding gifts. He had an attitude about money that went like this. God put fingers on our hands to let the money slide through. And whatever we gave away to those in need, Martin was confident God would reimburse in some way. He had absolute confidence in God's promise to provide. Oh, it's not that I didn't trust in God. I did. I just tried to be a little more practical in order to make our limited income stretch. I began to ask boarders to pay if they could. I took advantage of the former monastery's right to brew beer, and I learned to brew our own beer and make our own wine. I leased additional land for crops and gardens. I even bred, raised, and butchered some of our own animals. The work ethic and some of the skills I had learned in the convent were certainly put to good use in my role as manager of our home. Just a year after our marriage, our first child, a son, Hans, was born. I had been a little disappointed in Martin's reaction when he learned that we would be having a child. But when little Hans was born, he just considered him a precious gift from God. He was overjoyed. I could feel a real bond of love developing between Martin and me. And added to our family joys, Magdalene, my father's sister, who had escaped from the convent with me, came to live with our family. Despite these family joys, however, there were times when Dr. Luther suffered bouts of melancholy and depression, along with a variety of other physical ailments, no doubt a result of his early years of austerity, also his excessive hard work when he did not always take especially good care of himself. I'm reminded of one long period of depression when he actually thought he was dying. I finally decided to dress in mourning clothes, black, head to toe, heavy veil over my face. Well, when he saw me, of course, he assumed something terrible had happened, and he asked me why I was dressed that way. I simply replied, "Judging from the way you have been acting these past weeks, I assumed God is dead, and I have dressed appropriately." That seemed to bring him out of his lethargy. Just a little bit. When the plague struck Wittenberg, professors and students of the university were ordered to leave, but Dr. Luther refused to go. Although we were expecting our second child at this time, I too stayed behind to help with those who were ill. Our home by that time was called Luther House, our God's Inn, and it became a haven for the sick. The work was tireless. I was very thankful that I had Aunt Magdalene there to help me with the sick and also, of course, with little Hans. Our second child was a daughter, Elizabeth. Sadly, she died when she was just 8 months of age. It was a time of great grief for our family. Over the years, however, we were blessed with additional children. We had another daughter, Magdalene, two more sons, Martin and Paul, and finally, our last child, a daughter, Margaret, whom we named for Dr. Luther's mother. I was overjoyed when Dr. Luther decided to purchase the small von Bora estate, the former von Bora estate at Zulsdorf. I had lived there as a child before my mother died and I was sent to the convent, so it was part of my childhood. Of course, being that young, I didn't really remember it. Dr. Luther thought that the little farm would make me happy, especially when I was so sad when Aunt Magdalene died. She was the mother to me, in a way, the mother I had not known as a child. And yes, indeed, the farm made me very happy. It was a place of solace for our entire family when our beloved daughter Magdalene died at the age of 13. And it became a haven of rest for Martin himself. He was under so much pressure. He was concerned about bickering among colleagues and allies of the Reformation, causing harm to the spread of the gospel. International tensions were alarming. During this time, Martin made frequent journeys out of town to churches to try to strengthen them and also to settle disputes among some of the German princes. I was always worried when he went on these journeys, both about his health, of course, but also about potential physical harm and danger to him. It was one of those trips, a dispute-settling trip, that took him to Eisleben, as I mentioned at the beginning. Eisleben, the town of his birth and of his baptism. I had not wanted him to go, but he knew he needed to go to try to settle a dispute between two of the princes. I insisted our sons go with him. And it was while he was there in Eisleben that he became ill. I received word, and I sent some of his favorite household remedies to him, remedies that I had learned when I was in the convent. But he took a turn for the worse, and he died there in Eisleben. I was frightened and despondent when I received word that my beloved Martin was gone. He was 63 years old. We had been married for 21 years. I had no idea how I was going to provide for myself and our four living children. Additionally, we had taken on the responsibility of several orphaned nieces and nephews. Following his funeral and burial at the Castle Church in Wittenberg, I continued to live at the Black Cloister, which had been deeded to us early in our marriage. I had little money. Our land provided little income. Sadly, I felt deserted by some of the citizens of Wittenberg. Dr. Luther had made a will, which declared me to be his heir, but sadly, it was only signed by friends. It was never legally signed. It was very unusual for a widow to be the heir of her deceased husband's estate, so I was very grateful when the will was eventually declared legal. Another issue was that under Saxon law, a widow was not automatically granted guardianship of her own children. The concern was that she would not be able to adequately provide for them. I was very concerned that our four children would be taken from me and placed under the care of others, and I worked hard to see that that did not happen, and it didn't. Additionally, officials were trying to take control of my property and to deny me the right to administer Dr. Luther's property. Again, I worked hard to see that I would retain control, and I did. I think the stubbornness and determination that sometimes angered Martin during our marriage stood me in very good stead following his death. Various benefactors had pledged financial support to me following Martin's death. However, a long-anticipated war between the emperor and some German princes broke out. Obviously, money and attention were diverted to the war. To make matters worse for me personally, my little Zulsdorf farm lay in direct path of the hostilities. Wittenberg itself became an armed camp. My family and I had to flee for our safety. When we were eventually able to return to Wittenberg, we found that the parsonage had been ransacked. A portion of it still intact, however, but my beloved Zulsdorf farm lay in ruins. Gardens and crops were destroyed, animals gone, stolen, butchered, I don't know. To earn a little money, I am once again taking in boarders at the parsonage. I've been very grateful for a gift of money from the King of Denmark, and I've even sold a couple of expensive silver chalices that I had hidden when Martin was giving away our wedding gifts. I've borrowed some money, and I'm hoping to restore the farm and rebuild the parsonage. However, added to our present difficulties, the plague has returned to Wittenberg. I'm not sure what I am going to do. Prior to his death, Dr. Luther had said to me that he thought I should, at that time, sell the parsonage and move permanently to Zulsdorf. However, at this point, I'm planning to stay in Wittenberg for now to once again help those who are ill. Even though I felt deserted by some of them during my time of need, I do not intend to desert them. I have serious decisions to make for myself and for my family. I'm going to do what Martin and I did throughout our marriage, and that is to rely on God for direction in making those important decisions. As I complete Katie's story, permit me to become Bonnie and to step out of character. It's very difficult in a first-person portrayal to share details of one's own death. So I'm simply going to tell the rest of Katie's story. Katie did eventually make the decision to leave Wittenberg with her two youngest children. She was en route to Zulsdorf when she suffered a carriage accident. She was thrown from the carriage, and she did not recover from the injuries she sustained. She was taken to Torgau, where she was bedfast for several months. She died there in Torgau at the age of 53. Because the university had been moved from Wittenberg to Torgau because of the plague, she was buried at Torgau. You may recall that Dr. Luther is buried in Wittenberg at the castle church at the foot of the altar. So Katie and her beloved Martin are not buried together. I hope that having heard her story, you will agree with me that Catherine von Bora Luther was indeed a remarkable woman whose life was used by God in truly extraordinary ways to further his kingdom. Thank you so much for allowing me to share her story with you today.
We'll learn more about Katie von Bora, Katrina von Bora, when we return here on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
January is a treat for many of us who are involved in the pro-life movement. It's the annual March for Life in Washington, D.C., where over 100,000 people gather as living witnesses against legal abortion. This year was an adventure. We gathered in D.C. knowing a blizzard had the area in its crosshairs. Even though it was a smaller turnout, the size was still very impressive. As usual, young people made up the vast majority of marchers. It started snowing at the beginning of the march and was coming down hard by its end. Most of us hunkered down in our hotels to wait out the storm. During that time, we met new friends and were able to plan strategies for saving life. God often uses unexpected situations to further his kingdom, blizzards included.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
The Legacy Project is a coalition of sinner saints like you on a sojourn for the gospel. We tend the narrative of the gospel through a vibrant web presence, a top-shelf publishing house, a world-class speakers bureau, local radio ministry, and an international podcast. We need your support. Check us out at 1517legacy.com. Stand with us.
Ad Crucem offers theologically sound, scripturally rich, and high-quality items for nearly every occasion. They have exquisite greeting cards, handcrafted jewelry, fine art, crucifixes, church certificates, banners, and much more. AdCrucem.com has amazing products at great prices. That's AdCrucem.com. Greeting cards and gifts designed and made in the USA. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com.
Cross Defense, the apologetic show for inquiring minds of all ages. Cross Defense airs Mondays from 2 to 3 p.m. on air, online, on demand, right here on Worldwide KFUO.
Telephone service is essential to staying connected with your world. It can help you in case of an emergency. Call a doctor or pharmacy. Stay in touch with family and friends. The Lifeline and Disabled Programs in Missouri make telephone service more affordable by providing discounts to eligible low-income or disabled customers. For more information about these programs and to see if you qualify, please contact your local telephone provider. This message is sponsored by the Missouri USF Board.
You've discovered Worldwide KFUO, a radio station where you can find the clear biblical understanding of Christianity proclaimed daily in both word and song. Our talk programs can be heard live or on demand at your convenience anytime worldwide. The KFUO talk programs proclaim the true word of God, focused on salvation through Christ and Scripture alone. You've discovered KFUO.org, the messenger of good news.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We are learning about the life of Katharina von Bora, Katie Luther, as she was known, and my co-host in studio today, Joni. Welcome. So glad to have you here. Joni Harwell, my co-host here on Faith and Family.
Well, thank you so much, Andy. I was just so excited when Bonnie told me that she did this portrayal of Katharina von Bora Luther, and I said, you have to be on the radio. You have to do this for us. So, and it has been wonderful. I have enjoyed it immensely.
I don't know whether to introduce you as Bonnie or Katharina von Bora.
I'm called both, actually. It's interesting because at church, very often, because I've done it there a couple of times, on a Sunday morning, people greet me as Katie.
Either is fine. aside from being Katie, what are your other vocations, past and present?
Past and present. I was an English teacher and have enjoyed writing for much of my life, but I have to also say that my teaching career was interrupted by an 18-year hiatus as a full-time mom and homemaker, and Bill and I have four children. My husband is a retired Lutheran pastor. So my current vocations are being a grandmother and a very active member of Concordia Lutheran Church, where I'm involved in a variety of ministries, especially the older adult ministry and the mission board, those kinds of things. So that's kind of who I am.
Well, that background as a wife, a mother, and as a teacher, I'm sure has played some role in learning more about Katie Luther. But what specifically prompted you to do all the research to prepare this presentation? It's more than just a book report.
It's more than just a book report. Actually, that's an interesting word that you use, however, because my first introduction to Katie was a book review done by a lady who presented it at an LWML Zone rally many years ago in Cape Girardeau. And the book review, and it's a book many people are familiar mm-hmm. with, called Kitty My Rib mm-hmm. by E. Jane Maul. I think it was published by Concordia Publishing House mm-hmm. in 1959, mm-hmm. around that time period. And this lady, who was also an English teacher and a dramatist, did this wonderful book review on Katie Luther. And I kept that in the back of my thinking. It's one of those things, maybe many of us have that, the one of those someday I'm going to kind of things. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was someday I'm going to research Katie Luther. I didn't. I continued on and on and on. About 3 years ago, Concordia Kirkwood, our church, began plans to have an Oktoberfest in October. And I was on the planning committee early in the year, and I thought, this is it. This is my time. I have the time now. I'm retired. This is my time to research Katie. And I did. I said, I'll do a mm-hmm. program on Katie Luther. At first, I thought of simply researching and sharing about her story. Maybe that would be more in a talk mm-hmm. or a lecture. And I thought, no, that's... nobody wants to hear dates and information. I'll be Katie. That's where the idea for the portrayal came. So I began searching for information and basically had to rely on the internet. There is not a lot readily available by simply going to a library, but that began my interest. I did indeed write my script, memorized it as best as I could, and presented that program, and it's just gone from there.
And then once a Lutheran finds out about it.
You got it.
Well, you know, I think what's so interesting is most of the time we all read about Martin Luther and his wife, Katie. And yes, she left being a nun. She got married to Martin and life was great thereafter. The Reformation came and everything's good and you close the book. You're telling us a story where Katie didn't have such an easy life either. And
you're right.
And their marriage, while it was a marriage of love, it both had expectations coming into, like anyone mm-hmm. does, you know, and they suffered the loss of children, the mm-hmm. sadness of children, and then Katie suffering the loss of her husband. There were many, many sadnesses in her life.
There were. She did not have an easy life. They did not have an easy mm-hmm. life. I wanted my portrayal to really be about Katie, mm-hmm. and I didn't purposefully include the trials and the hardships that Dr. Luther certainly suffered in his wonderful reforming work of the Reformation, but she suffered those along with mm-hmm. him mm-hmm. and really did have a difficult life. I'm in awe of what she was able to do and accomplish. We need to remember we're talking about the early 1500s here. What she was able to do at the Black Cloister, which is quite an undertaking. It's my understanding they did have workers there. She did not do all of the work that I was referring to single-handedly. Because it was so big, I am of the understanding that at any given time, there were upwards of 30 to 40 people at the Black Cloister living there, be they family people, people who wanted to simply come and meet Dr. Luther, as I talked about, needy students at mm-hmm. the university, mm-hmm. monks who had left the monastery and had nowhere to go. So upwards of that number.
That's a lot of people at the dinner table.
That's exactly right. So again, she couldn't do all this single-handedly, mm-hmm. but she was mm-hmm. in charge. Mm-hmm. And that's remarkable, I think.
And I think it almost shows that after she had left the convent and then she came, there was a time that she lived with families where she was, as you said in your portrayal, almost learning or being prepared for what the next step mm-hmm. would be in her life. It wasn't just she left the convent and was thrown into this, but there were those 2 years where she learned how to deal with the family life, probably maybe how to prepare food, how to take care of children, which moved her into that next part of her life.
I agree with that, and that just makes me think what an awesome God we have.
Yes, yes.
That he indeed had a plan for Katie's mm-hmm. life and was giving her the experiences that would allow her to be successful, if we want to use that word, in spite of hardship. I think another interesting thing, which I have only recently realized, when she was in the convent, that I always pictured this building with, you know, nuns in it. It was a large estate. Mm-hmm. And there were many animals there, and there were grounds to tend, and it was a very large endeavor to keep that convent going. Again, experience for her that she would not otherwise have had, and mm-hmm. many experiences she was able to use later.
How would you say Katie's vocation as manager of the home, as wife and mother, how were her vocations key to the Reformation?
I think what she was able to do was to allow Dr. Luther to do the work that he needed to do and to be an incredible support for him. Mm-hmm. There were times in his depression, illness, that she was such a strong support for him. I'm not sure he would have been able to have accomplished all that he did
sure.
without this loving support of Katie in some of those difficult times that he went through. She played a very significant role
right,
in
right.
that regard, somewhat unknown. Mm-hmm. Most of us don't know that. But the more I read about her life, that's what I'm really mm-hmm. feeling about her.
We see in Acts chapter 6, we see that when the seven deacons are called to support the work of the ministry, so the pastors could continue to carry out the ministry that, to which they were called. You know, this is why should we give up the ministry of word and prayer for the sake of waiting tables? Katie's work, much like that, keeping the home going strong and healthy, providing that support to Luther at home, that companionship and that support from home enabled him to carry out his work, his vocation as a pastor, as a scholar as well.
That is exactly right. And although at the beginning, as I try to share in my portrayal, she was very concerned why he married her. Was it a marriage of love from the beginning? How do we really know? But what we do know is that it truly developed into a marriage of love and deep friendship, which is so important in marriage, and support for one mm-hmm. another. That role, that supporting role, was really significant, I think, in Luther's work and in his well-being mm-hmm. to allow him to do that work.
Well, I think the understanding of marriage in that time is very different than the understanding of marriage today. Our understanding of marriage today is very self-serving, that it's all about romantic love, falling in love with someone, as you demonstrated, and we see this in the scriptures. Someone may marry, but they learn to love throughout the marriage. They fall in love throughout the marriage.
That was exactly, as I was reading in a book just night before last, that it was exactly the 16th century model for marriage. Mm-hmm. Love developed in the course of the marriage, not before the marriage. And in the same way, I
sure.
think you're exactly right. And their situation would attest to that. Luther married Katie probably for a variety of reasons. Again, how do we really know? Mm-hmm. But they did develop a very loving relationship. And she indeed is really the first known pastor's wife. I mean, they established the parsonage, mm-hmm. so to speak. And again, in that regard, it is somewhat of a role model, even though mm-hmm. times have changed, obviously, so much. But just the loving support she gave her husband, what a wonderful witness.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would imagine also the fact that She was deeply committed to the Reformation, too. Played a big part in, and as you said, she was a very strong woman. He had, Martin Luther had to be married to a strong woman to go through all the things that he went through the Reformation, and her commitment to it too must have played an important part in that marriage as well.
I think that's right. As the, as I tried to share in the portrayal, as the nuns in the convent began to get more information, their commitment not only to getting out of the convent, but to furthering the cause of the Reformation and the principles for which it stood, I think played a significant role in her willingness to, maybe the word endure is too hard, but to be that support that Dr. Luther really needed. I think it's interesting, and although in my portrayal, I do use the word Martin in referring to how she spoke to him, she almost never publicly called him that. She always called him Sir Doctor as a sign of respect. Because again, now how do we know what she called him when they were alone?
right.
But because there were always so many people around, and that was, again, that was the position he was in, that she honored that in even just in how she referred to him.
Again, speaks volumes about the difference between marriage and relationships of that time and today as well.
Yes.
Not even marriage, I think, also in how you respected the pastor or someone who had learned, who had had all of these learning experiences and was sharing them with other people. You just didn't go around calling them by their first name or this. It was a friendship, but it, there was a respect there
as
well.
There was a respect. That's right.
Yeah.
Herr Pastor.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How would you say you are like Katie, as you've studied Katie over this course of time? Have you found that you're like her in any ways?
Well, of course, I've referred to the fact that I was a pastor's wife. Still am, I suppose, in that regard. I have, I think, some of the strength that she had. I think that although I probably sometimes come across as kind of a relatively gentle, easygoing person, I'm a strong woman when it, excuse me, when I need to be strong. But I think more important than those kinds of comments would be the fact that in my life, too, I certainly know that it is God and His provision for me that is my source of strength. And I relate to Katie. When times were tough, she looked to God for direction and strength and support. And that's just a lesson that I hope I am using in my life, as I hope all of us do, claiming that promise that God provides in the good and the bad. God provides, and not always promising that everything will be easy, but that He is there to support and guide us. So I would love to really know her and to be able to sit down and have a conversation with Katie. I can only do that through reading about her.
Sure.
And again, we don't have Katie's own words. We have only a precious few, one letter to her sister, for example. Most of what we know about her is through information that we have about Martin Luther, and then secondary through Katie. So I'd love to know more about who she really was, and you know, but we know enough.
Can you tell us anything about her children?
Yes, they had six, if you do remember in the portrayal. Elizabeth died in infancy. Now, there's a little discussion, as I have read about that, wondering whether the fact that Katie was exposed to the plague while she was carrying Elizabeth, did that have any bearing on the child who was born sickly? How do we know, again? So at any rate, Elizabeth died as an infant, and then Magdalene died around the age of 13, so four living children, three sons and a daughter. Hans, the firstborn, seemed to have great difficulty in finding his place in the world. Luther wanted very much for him to study law and to become someone who had a strong career. He really never achieved that. He had great difficulty in his studies. He did finally get a position as a court advisor, but that was, it seemed, kind of something that was somewhat given to him. Mm-hmm. Their son, Paul, was the most successful degree in medicine, went on to become a distinguished doctor. Their second son, Martin, studied theology, never completed his studies, never had a pastoral call. So again, you know, a little difficulty there in finding their way in life. Their last daughter, Margaret, married into a wealthy Prussian family, had a large family, either 8 or 9 children. Again, the sources mm-hmm. are different, and seemed to have a happy life until she did not live a long life, but seemed to have a happy life. So a little bit of a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. With the children in terms of their ability to find their way in life. They had a famous father. Whether that had, you know, anything mm-hmm. to do with it, I don't know.
Well, I think it kind of shows us they had the same kind of life all families
yes.
have.
Same and challenges,
I think
yeah.
we often think because, well, this Martin Luther was this great reformer, all of his children should have gone on and to greatness as well. But that isn't what always happens.
And the other thing we have to keep in mind is that Dr. Luther was gone a lot of the time mm-hmm. on his travels. Mm-hmm. And even when he was home, he was very absorbed, understandably, mm-hmm. in the important work that was going on. I'm sure it was very difficult for him to find a balance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which we all struggle with.
Right.
But
right.
At that time, to find that balance to really be a present father to his children, mm-hmm. I question sure. that was really
sure.
the case.
Everybody's mm-hmm. making sacrifices,
yes.
and there's a price to pay,
yes.
a price to be paid for that time.
That's
and
right.
I'm sure for him, as for any parent, the importance was them knowing Jesus Christ.
That's right.
And knowing that love in their heart. Mm-hmm. But one thing I think I've often thought about, and I know they talk about when the daughter died, Martin Luther being with her, but I always think about Katie, and I know we don't have anything about her, but what that must have put her through. And as you said, she's taking care of all these other people and at the same time suffering through this.
That's right. She was present when Magdalene died. However, the sources that we have give us the words that Luther said. And we're kind of led to believe that Katie was a little bit removed. It wasn't as if Martin and Katie were together, you know, mm-hmm. bonding and sharing this grief. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they had their difficult times mm-hmm. as a family.
Mm-hmm. We have just about a minute or so left. And you shared this in your portrayal as well. What life was like for Katie after Martin died? How difficult that was?
It was very difficult for her. The approximately 6 years that she lived after Dr. Luther's death were financially difficult for her. The plague made things more difficult. The war certainly added to hardship. This is not a woman who was just held in high regard by the citizens of Wittenberg. There was a lot going on at that time, which made things very mm-hmm. difficult. For her. So those years were not easy years for her at all in many ways. And that's somewhat sad to me to think about that, mm-hmm. that she struggled as she did in that mm-hmm. time following Dr. Luther's death. But again, a remarkable woman who was steadfast to the end. It's said that her final words were something to the effect that she would cling to Christ like a burr to a cloth. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of a good fitting closing thought about Katie. That
Absolutely.
Was her strength.
Absolutely. And you could hear that throughout the portrayal as well, that her faith in Christ was certainly key to what kept her going strong in all of her vocations.
That's right.
As wife, as mother, as pastor's wife, and manager of the household as well. Bonnie, thank you so much for being our guest today here on Faith and Family. It was great to hear your portrayal of Katie Luther. Bonnie Matzett, thanks for being our guest on Faith and Family.
You're welcome. A pleasure.
Joni, thanks for being my co-host today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word with Pastor Whedon on Worldwide KFUO.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.